You know, they called it the British Invasion when the Beatles came over with those Beatles haircuts. But let me tell you, Eric Burns, it's the new haircut. It's the new generation, buddy. And you're joined by a man who just a week ago was saying, as we gave him the choice of a Luis Gonzalez haircut or an Eric Burns haircut, it was unanimous. Both Josh Burns and Jim Beattie came down heavy on your side. So congratulations.
I'm not sure about that, because every time I talk to Josh Burns, he's always all over me about it. I actually got a call from Bob Melvin the other day, too. I got a call from him yesterday. He told me to mix in a comb with that haircut. So these guys, if they're saying that, they're definitely not relaying that information to me.
Well, Bob Melvin has been on the show this weekend, and Jim Beattie, you wouldn't care. I mean, let's face it, the Boston Red Sox did not seem to have a problem with their performance on the field based on their haircuts a couple years ago. Thanks for joining us, Jim.
Hey, Nick, how are you? I want to say hi to Burnsy. I traded for Burnsy about 05, Burnsy, it was. You came over, and I had to tell him that I used to wear my hair like that when I was young, but it puts so much stress on the roots. By the time you get my age, it just all falls out. So tell him be careful.
Yeah, I hear you, Jim. My next move, I'll be like Andre Agassi. I'm just going to let it flow, and then after that, I'm just going to lose it. I'll just take it all off. Hey, Jim.
Yeah, you know what? We're going to
line it up.
Hey! This is actually a good, this is Jim. I've been wanting to talk to you. You didn't have anything to do with releasing me, did you?
I was gone by that point.
I know you were gone by that point. And I'll tell you what, I got a question for you though. And honestly, I hate to jump in here, Nick. But
go for it, buddy.
I wanted to ask somebody in the Baltimore Orioles organization this. Because what happened is this, is Baltimore, Jim traded for me and gave me an opportunity to go out there and play, and I was very appreciative of that. Lee Mazzilli at the time was still the manager. According to him, what he told me when I came over there was that he had some influence in getting me over there, and he was really excited about having me. And I got over there, and I struggled. And it was, I just didn't hit. It was a tough situation. The Orioles were, they were on a downslide at the time. It was just a lot of X factors that just weren't working out for us. And what happens is I would have been arbitration eligible. Now, at that time, Jim's right, he was gone. Well, what they did is they non-tendered me a contract. So essentially what the Orioles did was release me. Now, when you get released and you go into the market, the free agent market, generally speaking, you go to take, you're going to take some sort of major pay cut. And then you go on, hopefully I was going to find a job. So when the Orioles non-tendered me, I was thinking what that means is I had no trade value. They can't get rid of me. They can't get somebody who would tender me a contract and pay me what I made, say, the year before. So the Orioles went ahead and just released me, got nothing in return, and then I ended up going out on the free agent market and making more than I did the previous year, which makes me look at that situation, Jim. Why would the Orioles just trade me as opposed to putting me out there in the free agent market? I mean, just to get something in return back. So, because as you look back on it, then all of a sudden you guys gave up Larry Bigby, who was such a big prospect for a long time, and myself for nothing, and getting nothing in return over there in Baltimore. Now, to your defense, Jim, like you said, you weren't there.
Well, I'll tell you what, and I wasn't party to everything that happened at that point because I said I was gone, but in our mind, we were going to, in all likelihood, either try to re-sign Larry Bigby to a much smaller contract or end up non-tendering him as well because he was arbitration eligible. So we would not have kept him. The second point of that is by the time, typically when you're going to look to, the non-tendering arbitration process is something that you attend to before December 20th. If they had interest in keeping you, they should have approached you about, this is the contract we have for you. If you're interested in signing that, good. If not, then we're probably going to look to non-tender you and have that conversation if they have interest in keeping you. Unfortunately, I think, Eric, when you did come over, there was a second move for you that year. You put a lot of pressure on yourself to try to fit in, to do some things to help the club. And it ended up, as you said, you struggled. And I think that part of it, when you have someone in your organization that gives you a chance to, you see them on a daily basis in person, what they do, and it obviously didn't play very well when it got to the arbitration decision, And again, I wasn't part of it, but I'm looking at them probably saying, you know what, we probably can, and I would think they may have tried to trade you, but it's no secret that a lot of clubs are going to non-tender. So clubs would say, well, I'm not going to give up anything for them because I can get them on the free agent market and pay them what I want then if I can get them to join my club.
I feel a lot of love here between Eric and Jim, and you know what? The same thing happened to me in 93, and essentially, you know, when I was asked to take a pay cut after leading the NFL in percentage by about 10%, and, you know, what I like is, Eric, the fact that you've been able to maintain the good relationships, and people like Jim Beatty still feel great about you, and I have to take my hat off to you that, you know, you've handled this situation, this transition from Luis Gonzalez as well as Luis has in a way that few people do. But let's shift for a few minutes, since we do have a few minutes left, about you know, the World Series, and I'm going to start off with Steve Palermo, who's actually based in Kansas City, used to come to Chiefs practices all the time, and about his comments about this interesting Kenny Rogers situation. And I liken back to the Mickey Lolish era, when Mickey Lolish basically could not throw a ball. He was so in control and turned around that series for Detroit, but maybe he wasn't using what Kenny Rogers was using. Here's Steve Palermo.
There was no formal request made as far as Kenny Rogers being inspected. It was just detected that there was a noticeable dirt mark of some sort on his left hand, his pitching hand. And after the first inning, I believe it was, Alfonso Marquez, the home plate umpire, just asked Kenny to remove that dirt so that there wouldn't be any question as far as any controversy.
You know what? The bottom line is, guys, that Kenny Rogers pitched 8 shutout innings, 7 of them after that ball was, that hand was washed off. So my question, let's first start with Eric Burns, is really the damage that he did the suggestion, kind of like a Gaylord Perry, it's putting in the heads of the players on the other team that he might be doing it, and that's really the psychological win that he won?
No, I think that, well, first of all, I talked to Steve Palermo, and Steve Palermo offered me the same explanation in the tunnel with 3 outs to go in the game. Nothing against Steve Palermo, and not that I think that he's fabricating what happened, but, you know, for me, I'm looking at Kenny Rogers' hand, and that noticeable dirt mark appeared not to be dirt. So, if I'm looking at this situation, if I'm Tony La Russa, in Tony's defense, I don't think Tony knew exactly what was going on, because he had a clubhouse kid come down and tell him something about it. And that's how the whole thing got brought to notice. None of this would have came up if it wasn't for Fox Television and all the cameras and all the high def that picked up the spot on Kenny Rogers' hand. But the thing is if I'm Tony, I'm causing a stink about this. I'm not going to let this game go on, because I want to win a World Series. I want Kenny Rogers out of that game, and I want him suspended for the rest of the series. So
what's interesting is you got Tony La Russa saying there's no indication from the clubhouse something's going on with the pitcher. I have a decision to make. I decided I was not going to be part of the garbage where I was going to ask the umpire to go to the mound and undress the pitcher. Do you think that's because he has so much respect for Jim Leland? He figured it was handled, and he just didn't want to. He wanted to give them the benefit of the doubt the first time around.
Yeah, he had respect for the pitcher, for Kenny. I think he had respect for Jim Leland, and I think he had respect for the game of baseball, and he didn't want this to be marred in controversy. But let me tell you something. I think baseball needs a little controversy. This is an American society that loves gossip, that loves controversy. And I'll tell you what, I think that this right here is actually good for the game. I think this might even help the ratings for Major League Baseball. Why do you think Fox was searching for something like this? Because this is a regionalized World Series. This is a World Series that the first game was one of the lowest rated World Series of all time, because it's regionalized. You're talking about the same markets in Detroit and St. Louis. So I think this is good. The steroid controversy is over. The labor agreement's just about done. All of a sudden, here we have it. We got controversy again.
Yeah, baby. Hey, Jim Beatty, we know you got to go here in the last minute. Tell us your take on this. Does this remind you of the Gaylord Perry days or what?
Well, on first part, I think any pitcher knows what's on his hand. I mean, you know if you've got a little hangnail, you know if you've got anything going on in your pitching hand. So, and if you do it yourself, you look and you can touch your fingertips right to that spot on your palm to put a little extra whatever it was on your fingertips to give you some grip. But on the other hand, given the scrutiny that TV cameras give players and pitchers and everybody else, it's so obvious that you can't believe that that's what it was. But, you know, it should have been, I think, during the game, made a bigger deal of it than it was. And in fact, Kenny Rogers has been, I saw an interview, he said the umpires never mentioned it to him. The umpires came over to him to talk to him about not going out too early in the inning because it's so cold and we've got to wait for the commercials to break. So pace yourself that way. They didn't mention anything. He said he just kind of noticed it when he walked off the mound and went in and watched it himself. And so
yeah, well, listen,
unfortunately,
we got to go to a break here, but Jim, thanks for giving us your input on this. We're going to talk a little bit more about this, and also, heaven forbid, we actually talk about the matchup tonight with Carpenter and Robertson when we come back with Eric Burns. And Jim, thanks again, as always, for joining us. Hopefully, we'll talk to you later in the week.
All right, guys. Have fun. Burns, good luck. Good to talk to you.
Hey, thanks, Jim. Thanks for the opportunity last year. Even though it didn't work out, I appreciated that. Thank you, though.
You bet. Take care.
All right. Well, we'll be right back with Eric Burns. You're listening to Head Games Radio on Sports Byline and Sirius Satellite.